Wednesday at youth group, the kids were asked, what's an encouraging word or deed your mom has done for you? And they wrote down their thoughts on some cards. And of course, they mentioned a number of ways that moms can be encouraging. No surprises here. Instilling confidence, supporting their dreams, being there for them. And then some got specific. One son commented how his mom taught him to cook. Go mom, go son. Another said, she brought me into this world. Which reminds me of that next phrase, right? And she can take you out, right? Another one wrote, not letting me eat too much junk food, which I would do if she wasn't there to stop me. Didn't sign a name for probably good reason. And then there's five I just want to show you, because these are better seen than just described. So the first one there, you can see it says, she helps me when I'm going through really tough times. And I like the artwork there, the creative artwork. The next one says, you got this, keep going, you got this, name. Didn't want to list their name anyway, but I guess knew that mom would say their name. The next one, she lets me yap to her about my teachers. And then you can see it was signed the person who wrote this. You gotta love teenagers, they're so clever. Number four, what hasn't she done for me? Good point. And there is signed by Kira, who says you can say my name. So Kira, I just said your name. And then the last one, teaches me to trust in the Lord and make prayer a constant priority. Of course, it's not just our kids who need that, right? We all need reminders, encouragement, support, and love. Many of us found that at home with mom or dad or both. But for some of us, that just wasn't the case. And we had to look elsewhere for that support. And that was hard. Perhaps this is why the most consistent word the Apostle Paul uses to describe the believers in the churches that he writes to is simply the word brothers. He's talking about family, about being brothers and sisters in Christ. Over and over, he uses this word more times than we can almost count because it's so important for him to describe these new group of believers as brothers and sisters, as family. We hold a common bond because of the unshakable bond we have with Jesus, who happens to be, in one sense, our older and most faithful brother. So as we continue this look at this short letter of 1 Thessalonians in the New Testament, we're going to look this morning about how Paul has this parent-like concern for these believers. He writes this letter, and it's probably less than a year after he met these folks. So you think about how quickly he got to know them, and yet still the depth of compassion and love he has for them. Listen to what Paul says in 1 Thessalonians 2, 1 through 12. For you yourselves know, brothers and sisters, that our reception among you was not in vain. But after we had already suffered and been treated abusively in Philippi, as you know, we had the boldness in our God to speak to you the gospel of God amid much opposition. For our exhortation does not come from error or impurity or by way of deceit. But just as we have been approved by God to be entrusted with the gospel, so we speak, not intending to please people, but to please God who examines our hearts. For we never came with flattering speech, as you know, nor with a pretext for greed. God is our witness. Nor did we seek honor from people, either from you or from others, though we could have asserted our authority as apostles of Christ. But we proved to be gentle among you. As a nursing mother tenderly cares for her own children, in the same way we had a fond affection for you and were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but also our own lives, because you had become very dear to us. For you recall, brothers and sisters, our labor and hardship. It was by working night and day so as not to be a burden to any of you that we proclaimed to you the gospel of God. You are witnesses, and so is God, of how devoutly and rightly and blamelessly we behave toward you believers, just as you know how we were exhorting and encouraging and imploring each one of you as a father would his own children, so that you would walk in a manner worthy of the God who calls you into his own kingdom and glory. Paul says there, by way of reminder, that he came to them, that he and his co-workers came with a purpose. He came, he was battered and bruised from the treatment he'd received at Philippi, but he came with the gospel, the good news of Jesus. And Paul had no hidden motives. He wasn't trying to flatter them or make a buck off of them. And he sure didn't come as a people pleaser, but he came to please God. Basically, Paul said to them, what you saw in us, was just simply the real us. And then we come to verse 7 in this passage, where Paul says, we came gentle among you. At least that's the version I read to you, the updated New American Standard. But some versions have the word babies here, or children. It's one of the few times in the New Testament where we're just really not sure what word Paul used. Did he say babies? Did he say gentle? The words are really close in the original. But even when we're not sure, the point that Paul makes is still very clear in the context, which frankly is almost always the case when we have questions about what the New Testament is saying. The big picture is not usually confusing to us. We get it. And so we understand here what Paul is saying. He didn't show up in Thessalonica throwing his weight around. He didn't pass the offering plate demanding to be paid as a preacher. And when they didn't give enough, he said, we're going to pass it again. He didn't do that. He came gentle, or like a child. Or maybe we could say he came gentle like a child. In so doing, he was following the example of Jesus when his disciples came to him in Matthew 18, and they asked, who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? He called a little child to them and placed the child among them. And he said, truly I tell you, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever takes the lowly position of this child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. That's the example Paul comes bringing to the Thessalonians. He comes humbly to serve them, to nurture them, which is exactly what we see at the end of verse 7 when he says, he came like a nursing mother who cherishes her children. Now imagine I could transport you back 1975 years ago, give or take a few years. And imagine that in Thessalonica, it was also Mother's Day, like it is here in Louisville, nearly 2,000 years later. And imagine at that church, they have all the mothers stand up, and Paul stands up with them. He gets some funny looks, right? Probably some chuckles. But Paul, here in 1 Thessalonians, clearly describes himself as kind of a mother figure to these new believers. Those are his words, not mine. And it's especially striking when you think about how Paul would have described himself before he came to Jesus. The change that Jesus brought in him gives Paul a new perspective on who he is and how he can describe himself. And now Paul apparently unashamedly, unawkwardly describes himself like a nursing mother who cares for these children of Thessalonica. Because he is sold out to Jesus, he now changes his perspective. Because he follows the one who tells us in Matthew 20:28, when Jesus says, I didn't come to be served, but to serve and give my life as a ransom. And so Paul has taken that as his model for ministry. And he arrives in Thessalonica, not with a boastful heart, but a nurturing one. He comes not throwing his weight around, but desiring to help the Thessalonians carry their weight. This is what we love about mothers, about spiritual mothers, really about anyone in our life who follows the example of Jesus and then cares for and comforts, encourages and spurs us on when we need it. And is there ever a time, do we ever reach that age when we don't need that kind of encouragement, that kind of spurring on? I read the story once of a teacher at a church who was sharing with the kids the story of Jesus calling the disciples to follow him. And after she had finished the lesson, by way of review, she asked them, so who says, come follow me? To which one child answered, mommy. It's true, right? Moms say, come follow me, but she was in Sunday school, so she should have known the right answer was Jesus. But maybe that kid was onto something and knew more than she realized. Because it's a reminder that all of us need someone in flesh to follow. Right? We need someone we can physically look to as an example, as a model, as a guide as we live this life and all of its challenges. Every one of us needs companions on the way as we seek to follow the way of Jesus day by day. Look at what Paul tells these same group of believers in his next letter to them in 2 Thessalonians 3, 7 through 9. For this reason, brothers and sisters, in all our distress and affliction, we were comforted about you through your faith. For now we really live if you stand firm in the Lord. For what thanks can we give to God for you in return for all the joy with which we rejoice because of you before our God? Paul sets an example, and he's grateful for their faith. He'll then go on to describe how he has been an example, and how he worked while he was among them. He didn't just mooch off of them. He didn't just expect them to take care of him, but he worked, and he took care of himself as he also preached the gospel to them. And so what Paul does is he sets an example for them in what we might call the small stuff, the everyday reality of getting up and doing the work. That's an area where every one of us can use a model, an example of people who just do the daily, regular stuff. But it's also a reminder that every one of us can be an example to others of doing the regular, daily stuff of living faithfully. Because for every one of us, Monday morning will come, in fact, tomorrow, right? Every one of us has to get up tomorrow and do whatever it is our day or our week requires. And the truth is, some days it's hard to get up, right? Some days it's hard to get going. It's hard to move forward. It's easier to mail it in, cut the corner, lie to the boss, cheat on the test. Let me encourage you that your example is really important, not just for your own heart, but for others as well. So let me encourage you to resist the temptation to cut corners, to mail it in, to just go halfway. Instead, choose to be a person who sets an example that points others to Jesus in whatever kind of life you are living. And when you stumble and your example is not so exemplary, let God pick you up and just do the next right and faithful thing. It's as simple as doing your job or doing the dishes, being on time and being kind. It involves producing the mature fruit of the Spirit when you feel like it, and when you don't. So whether you're old or young, or somewhere in between, whether you're a mom or dad, or you haven't had the opportunity to be a parent, whether the parents you had were the kind you want to follow or not, you can be the kind of person who's an example for others to follow by following Jesus faithfully, daily, humbly, one step at a time, right where you are, with whatever stuff you're facing, even on the most difficult days. For just as Paul gives the Thessalonians a pattern for the regular days of life, he also gives them a pattern and gives the churches a pattern for the hard days too. Listen to what he writes to the Corinthians in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, describing some of his harder days. 5 times I received from the Jews the 40 lashes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was pelted with stones. 3 I was shipwrecked. I spent a night and a day in the open sea. I've been constantly on the move. I've been in danger from rivers, in danger from bandits, in danger from my fellow Jews, in danger from Gentiles, in danger in the city, in danger in the country, in danger at sea, and in danger from false believers. I have labored and toiled and have often gone without sleep. I've known hunger and thirst and have often gone without food. I've been cold and naked. Wow, that's a lot, isn't it? Just reading it can be kind of overwhelming, but I know, for me at least, it makes me grateful. I'm not Paul. How about you? Like, man, my list doesn't compare anything to that. But perhaps that's not the point. Because the reality is, if you were to sit down and write a list of the things that you have gone through and that you are going through, let alone the stuff you don't know is around the corner coming at you, every one of us could write a list of difficult things that we have or are facing. And the challenge isn't, and the reality isn't, that we compare and contrast and we say, well, one person's got more than I do, or I've got more than they do. It's what do you do with what is coming your way? Are you clinging to Jesus through those hard times? Even to the point where you find joy, knowing that the one that we hold on to is the one who holds on to us every day. And you see, the one area that brings both together is the daily and the difficult can be, for many of us, the challenge of helping our kids grow into healthy and holy adulthood. Someone has said that when your kids are young, we get to control things. We get to set clear rules like don't run into the street. And when they do, and they're 2, we're big enough to grab them and hold on to them, despite the fact that they might be kicking and screaming and yelling and throwing a tantrum. Because as most kids learn that when you don't give in to the tantrum, eventually the tantrum backs off. And they realize this isn't working. And if you're a 2-year-old, you look around and you go, I got nothing else in my toolbox. All I got is tantrums. And if they don't work, what am I going to do? So at the very least, when kids are little, we at least have the physical ability and the authority to kind of hold them back and restrain them some. But if you've been around kids very long, you know that they quickly grow and that we quickly have less and less power to do that. And so as they grow, someone has pointed out, then we become more like a coach to them, right? What does a coach do? A coach doesn't play the game, right? The coach guides the game. The coach puts you in the game and says, all right, we're going to run this play. But the coach can't control it when they don't run the play, right? Now, the coach can say, you're going to sit your butt on the bench because you didn't do it right. But ultimately, the coach can only guide, advise, and have a little bit of control, but the coach doesn't play the game. As our kids get older, we become more like coaches. But then our kids reach adulthood, young adulthood, late teenage years, and we become more like a consultant, it's been pointed out. An unpaid consultant, you might say, right? We're not getting any money. In fact, we're losing money on this proposition. Even well into their 20s, maybe 30s, we're still losing money on it, but we're kind of like a consultant. Now, a consultant has a voice, but it only is offering thoughts, ideas, suggestions. Ultimately, if a consultant speaks, the person can do whatever they want with that information, right? They can decide to follow it, take bits or pieces of it, and say, you know what? That's stupid. I'm not doing any of it. We become more like consultants, and they can go on their own way if they want as young adults. And here again, I'm speaking primarily to parents who are in the space that I'm in right now. I've got 320-somethings, and I'm trying to learn what it means to be a consultant, to stay connected so that when they're ready for my counsel, they're able to hear it, to keep the communication lines open because we have been faithfully loving them all along their journey. That's my encouragement to you, whether you're a parent, a grandparent, or you just care about kids. Stay connected. Don't lose track. Even if they go off on a journey that you have no idea where it's taking them, even if it's frustrating or annoying or discouraging to you, stay connected. Keep the lines of communication open. Let them know you're there for them no matter what. If you're a parent, a grandparent, an auntie, a teacher, whatever it is, keep the kids in your life, letting them know that they're a vital part of your life. And then the doors of communication and encouragement will depend on your faithful love, not how wise or smart you might be, even if that's really true, right? Because what you do may not be determined by how much you know or how much you want to do, but by how much they're ready to receive. And the bond that holds all that together is your commitment and your availability for them. Because things are just different, right, when they're 23 versus 13 or 3. And even when they make choices we disagree with, or maybe they're just simply not good and godly choices, we can still be an influence. Just don't be surprised when your influence looks less like a lecture and more like a listening ear. Because the one thing that they will never stop needing from you is your love. And your love will likely be the thing that reaches them more, and it will happen more by who you are than what you say. This is what we see from Paul in 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 7 and 8. Again, words we already read, but let me read to you them again. We were like young children among you, or gentle among you, just as a nursing mother cares for her children, so we cared for you. Because we loved you so much, we were delighted to share with you not only the gospel of God, but our lives as well. I love that picture. Paul said, I came to you. We came to you. We weren't just talking the talk. We were living it out with you. We were walking the walk. To me, that's a reminder for all of us. Let's make sure we talk the talk. Let's make sure we know what we believe. Let's make sure that we are talking what we believe. But if we don't walk the walk, the talk doesn't get heard, does it? If there's no walk behind the talk, others will simply walk away, having learned more from our lack of a walk, no matter what we say. To me, this is a reminder that actions eat words for breakfast every day. Do you know what I mean when I say that? Actions eat words for breakfast every day. It simply means that the life you live will always drown out the words you say if the two don't match up. You can pronounce and pontificate all you want, but if you don't practice what you preach, your sermon will fall on deaf ears. No matter who you are, parent or child, church leader, or just regular old you, your life is the message. So Paul comes to the Thessalonians like a mom of a newborn, But he also says in verse 11, he comes like a dad. Apparently, in Thessalonica, Mother's Day and Father's Day fell on the same day. For in 1 Thessalonians 2, Paul can compare himself to both a mother and a father. But in that same chapter, if we take the version that has him coming as a child, in the span of five verses, Paul covers the entire family. It's as if he wants to be an example, no matter what image we pick, right? Mom, dad, or kid. Paul wants to be an example, no matter what example we pick. A pattern for the Thessalonians to follow. I'm family, Paul says. I'm on your side, gently, lovingly encouraging you on. So for Paul, sometimes he sets that example like a mom who scoops up her kid when they've fallen and scrape their knee, right? Kind of lovingly nurturing, kissing and hugging and encouraging them, drying their tears. But sometimes it's more like a dad who rubs some dirt on it and says, get back out there, kid. You got this. Paul was able to give a pat on the back and then a push from behind when either or both were needed. He can say this because of what he says in 1 Corinthians 11:1. Follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. His model, a model for us today too, that as we imitate Jesus, we become an example for others. And the beauty of this is you don't have to stand up here to do that. In fact, I would suggest to you it's better if you don't stand up here in a place like that. That your example is much more better, much more effective when you live it out in your everyday life. At home, at work, at school, in your neighborhood, wherever life takes you. You get to be an example for Jesus right where you are. If Jesus is your Lord, your life should be a light to others in your everyday life. Imperfect, yes. With your own doubts and struggles, of course. But when you keep doing the daily deal of trusting in Jesus through your stuff, I think that's exactly where others most need to see Jesus in you. All you need to do is faithfully look to him and follow him every day. And when you stumble, be an example of humility, honesty, and confession as you get back up by the grace of God and take the next step. So moms, light the way for the rest of us. Dads too. But the truth is, the job is too big just for moms and dads. We all have got to be in this game. We all need everyone to be an example as we move forward. We need those who are without kids. We need those who are still kids. If you're called to follow Jesus, then you're called to be a guide to others to follow. Because you're not too young or too old to show others the way of Jesus. You're not too married, you're not too single, you're not too divorced to walk with Jesus and bring someone along with you. Because when you look to Jesus, no matter what you face in life, no matter the cards life has dealt you, you can be an example for others to learn from, to follow, as you point them beyond yourself to Jesus. So I would just end with two simple questions. And really the end of this message is really the beginning of the questions we should be asking ourselves. And the two questions are just this: who are you following? And who's following you?